just discovered
it. We are back on WLXU LPFM with Bluegrass Refugee Voices. I'm Carissa here with you today, and I have Esther Brock and with us, and Steve Zahn, and we are talking to Esther Brock about his story, and I think Steve has a couple of questions for Esther Brock.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When did you, was English a part of school, or did you learn that later, or?
Yeah, well, we as an Iraq system, the learning system, or it was on the primary school at the fifth grade, uh-huh. we started learning English, and it has to be, it's complementary, you have to have it, you right. can't drop it. So from the fifth year till the high school,
oh.
and on the college, some colleges they have like 100% English teaching, and some colleges they have like 50%. My college was 100% English teaching. So that helped a lot in my English, I guess.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. When you left, where did you go?
When I left in 2006, there was very limited places we can go because we were not allowed to have visas due to our passport was like most of the countries, the world countries, were not allowing visas to Iraqi passports. So I have no way to go, other way to go, but Jordan. So Jordan was our, like, the lung for Iraq because it's the only place you can travel to without visa. And then from Jordan, I tried to get a visa to another country because Jordan was, like, economically very hard place. Like, the people of Jordan themselves, they cannot find jobs. So you have to go somewhere else. It's not, stable. So
and they had thousands and thousands and thousands of refugees.
It's the majority of countries. I mean, it's one of the major country for destination for refugees. Yeah. So I think it's like population of Iraqis in Jordan, maybe I don't know how much, but it's maybe more than 1 million, 2 million. I'm not sure how many. So wow. I had to go. I get a visa. I was lucky to go United Arab Emirates.
Uh-huh.
I got the chance to go to Dubai. I stayed in Dubai for 8 years till I was relocated to United States. So, but unfortunately, the time was in Dubai was very hard because we were not allowed to have a permanent visa. So our visa were like temporary status, and it's a couple of years. And within a couple of years, we were not guaranteed that we will get extension for another 2 years.
Right.
So within the 8 years, I got only 2 years legal staying in UAE, but the six wow. years was illegal staying in UAE.
Right, so you couldn't work, you couldn't...
Undercover, because I have to be away from the immigration officers because I'm illegally staying in the country. So it was like working with a very low income because it's undercover, and I have no rights, I cannot go to hospitals, I cannot claim anything because I don't have ID, pretty much, so... That was a really hard stage, but there was no other choice. I have to stay in that country because if I will get caught, they will deport me, and they will deport me to my national country, which is Iraq, which I cannot go back because of the life-threatening events.
Yeah. So, got status from the United Nations, right, as a refugee?
Yeah.
Got that status, United and then at what point did they say, you know, I don't think you're ever going to be able to go back to Iraq. Let's put you in the resettlement program and... How did that happen?
Yeah, well, United Nations office in United Arab Emirates, it's not a formal office. They were in Emirates because they were invited as a temporary situation. They don't have they did not sign the United Nations contract for refugees, the government of United Arab Emirates. So they do not give us any kind of protection permits or a permanent status or any protection documents. We have to stay by our own. So the first letter, the first sentence I have heard from the United Nations, like, we cannot guarantee your stay. We will work on your case. Mm-hmm. It will take a few years, but you have to be responsible for your staying. If for any case you've been deported or relocated to another country, you will need to proceed with another office in any other country you will be. We cannot guarantee your stay. So we can help you, but you'll be responsible for how you're going to stay in this country. There's not any protection, zero.
Right, so very limited help. But they took your name, took your claim,
absolutely.
And then referred you to the United States.
Yeah, exactly. They took my name, they heard my story, they collect everything. The case stayed with the office for exactly 2 years before it was being decided, like, I'm eligible for further steps.
Right, and then you just got on a plane and came here, right? That's how it worked.
Well, then the other 3 years took the process
exactly
to get the ticket to go to the United States and to get the landing in our lovely Chicago airport. I mean, it's our lovely Chicago.
And
I love Chicago.
That was interviews.
Yeah, there was. I'm not sure how many. I mean, like lots of interviews. Lots of people interview us. A lot of agencies. Some agencies from overseas. Some agencies came from Lebanon, Beirut. Some agencies came from Turkey, Istanbul. So I don't know even how many agencies interviewed me particularly.
Wow. Yeah. And that had to make sure your story matched.
It's the same story. We're just repeating the same story. Different questions, different approach, different people. But it's the same story. Right. Like same events has to repeat it several times.
Right. And then fingerprints.
Absolutely.
And retinal scans.
That was the stage where we reached the DHS office for United States, like we are finalizing our work here. So our fingerprints were being taken, pictures, interviews with the officers, DHS officers, Homeland Security officers. And that took almost 9 months to finish the process because it's like several departments has to check on our backgrounds. And there's a medical test as well. Mm-hmm. So it takes very long time. And it's a very slow process.
Right.
And all these agents are top notch. That's another thing. It's not like some, you know,
no Peace Corps volunteer
exactly that comes in, and they're very good at finding deception.
They were professional officers.
Yeah,
they were professional security
officers.
They
know what they're doing.
And I think that is the thing. That's the piece that is missing to the public of what it means to actually be a refugee and come through that program. People just don't know.
It's the most frustrating thing that I hear about almost on a daily basis. A week ago, you would hear about vetting. You would hear the word vetting.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you would never hear any specifics about vetting. You would hear, yeah, well, I think there should be tougher vetting. What does that mean? Explain to me what tougher vetting is.
Right.
And if you actually just look it up, there's plenty out there you can read that our vetting process is unbelievable. It's not a joke.
Yeah.
And when they would say, well, it takes, you know, 12 months to 18 months, I said, no. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it takes years.
Yes.
It did. It did. It does take years.
So if you want to make it stronger, how do you make it stronger? But no one asked that question.
That question was asked to IRC, International Rescue Committee. And the answer was the only way to make it stronger is to question people's ideology and beliefs. Like that.
And then you cross over into.
Who are we? You know, right? We're going back to ideals of Saddam Hussein to create this sameness. And that part is so scary. That's the part that really is frightening.
Mm-hmm. Well, you cannot go into people's mind. You cannot go into people's hearts and dig around information. There is no technique. There is no scientific way to go to dig this information. I mean, the vetting now, it's very hard and it's very slow and take very long time. So if we make it even harder, we're just going to make it longer. We will not make it stronger because
you're
already
exactly
strong.
Exactly right.
That's my opinion on
it. Yeah.
And this idea that that, okay, a terrorist, if I'm a terrorist and I want to come to the United States and cause trouble, I mean, this is just logic. Am I going to go to a refugee camp and go through a 3 to 5 year process to get possibly even not even guaranteed that I'm going to go anywhere? Less than 1%.
Less than 1%
of refugees actually get to where they want to go, and or get to go anywhere.
Right.
And so I'm going to go through this process in order to come and do some shenanigans. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Whatsoever.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I can make it even more clear. Like the program of resettlement or relocation is not specifically for the United States. So if any tourists want to go through that place or that idea to go to United States to do like a natural attack, he is not guaranteed even he will be relocated to the United States.
Right.
Because there's like 7 or 8 countries they can take refugees. That program doesn't go exclusively to United States. It can go to any other country. Mm-hmm. Right. But it depends on your luck, which country will pick your file.
Right.
So let's make it even less opportunity to go, a tourist to go through that way, because it's uncertain where he's going to.
If you want to do it, you marry someone from that country.
But that may be
You get a student visa and you go. There's a lot of different ways. It's ridiculous.
It does. It gets very ridiculous. And then, I think the key, though, we've all talked about, and is getting to know people. And that's the only way people's minds are changed. I think, Steve, like you said, growing up with folks in your home, and the idea that I have a relationship with Esterbrock and know him, and then I'm like, oh, that's what someone from Iraq is like. That's what someone who's Muslim is like.
Yeah.
And that changes the perspective.
Yes, it's
true. That is the thing.
With everything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, our problem in our country, one of the problems is geography. I mean, geographical kind of, we live in a huge nation, and I would always defend, like, I'd run into Europeans that were traveling and go, like, you guys don't travel. I go, well, you guys have different countries, like, next door. Oh, exactly. It's like going to Tennessee for us.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, for us, we don't travel.
No.
Like most people in Western civilization. But that's our problem, and once you've traveled, I've traveled the world. I've been through Africa and Asia and the Middle East, and I've lived in crazy places, and that is what influences your opinion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, another short little break here, and we'll be back, and maybe we'll lighten the mood a little bit when we get back.